All right, so we're diving into The Lion of Judah. This deep dive is on excerpts from Dr. August Konkol's lecture on the Book of Chronicles, specifically session 4. And this is really interesting. We're going to be uncovering how the tribe of Judah rose to power. Also, explore this intriguing story of Jabez and how the chronicler presents a unique perspective on the birthright and the blessing.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's great. He really knows how to connect the dots.
Yeah.
Dr. Konkol weaves together biblical text with like his knowledge of ancient history and geography and really paints a vivid picture.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how he starts by grounding everything in genealogy. Like Dr. Konkol establishes David as a descendant of Perez through Hezron and Ram, and he firmly places him within, you know, the grand narrative of Israel's history.
Yeah. So it's not just like names on a family tree. It's about understanding David's place within like this long and complex history.
Exactly. And then he goes on to talk about the concluding history of Judah. He mentions important families like those of Caleb, Edom, and Asher. And it's like he's piecing together a puzzle, showing us how all these different pieces fit together.
Oh, that's really cool. He also mentions Tekoa too, right? Which is a village associated with wisdom. It emerges from these lineages. So I'm curious, what do you think about that detail?
I think the chronicler is subtly hinting at the intellectual and spiritual depth within the tribe of Judah.
Yeah.
It's as if he's foreshadowing the kind of leadership that will eventually emerge from this tribe.
Okay. So we've got like the solid foundation of genealogy and history, and then bam, Jabez. Kind of sudden, don't you think?
It does. Yeah. Like the introduction of Jabez is almost jarring. He doesn't have any clear genealogical ties to the other figures we've been discussing, but the chronicler clearly thinks his story is very important.
That's a good point. So why include Jabez? What's the significance here?
Well, the answer might lie in the meaning of his name. Jabez in Hebrew connects to the word etzev, which means pain. It's the same word used in Genesis to describe the curse on Eve, not just physical pain, but profound emotional anguish.
Wow. That connection to Eve's curse is really powerful. It makes you think about the depth of suffering associated with his very name.
Right. Dr. Konkol even emphasizes this by bringing up the tragic story of Cain and Abel. It's, you know, a story filled with unimaginable pain.
Of a mother.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's like the chronicler is saying, this man, Jabez, knows suffering.
So how does Jabez react to all this pain?
He goes to God in prayer. And his prayer is incredibly bold. He asks God to bless him, to keep him safe, to be with him, and to expand his territory.
Wow.
It's a prayer that reflects a deep desire for more than just survival. It's a prayer for flourishing, even in the midst of pain.
And of course, the chronicler tells us that God answers Jabez's prayer. I mean, it makes you think about how God works, doesn't it?
It does. The chronicler presents this as evidence that God has the power to overcome pain.
Yeah.
And bring about prosperity for those who seek him. But I think it's crucial to approach this narrative with a bit of nuance.
Right. This isn't a simple equation of like pray and get rich.
No.
God's blessings come in countless forms. And sometimes blessings come through trials and hardships.
Yeah. Dr. Konkol even brings up the cautionary tale of Bruce Wilkinson. His very, very narrow focus on material prosperity through the Jabez prayer backfired when he tried to apply it in a specific context in Africa.
Oh, interesting. That's really interesting. So it really highlights the danger of like taking things out of context.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The chronicler is not advocating for a simplistic interpretation, you know, where material wealth is the sole indicator of God's blessing. It's about trusting in God's plan, even when it's difficult.
Yeah, I mean, Jabez's story is a reminder that God can work through anyone, even those who have experienced deep pain.
Absolutely. And it's a reminder that even in the darkest of times, God's grace and power are available to those who seek him.
So we've talked about Jabez and the complexities of God's blessings. What other figures does Dr. Konkol introduce us to in the tribe of Judah?
He briefly discusses groups like the Calebites and the Kenizzites, linking them back to the Book of Joshua. He reminds us of their roles in conquering and settling the Promised Land.
And then there's the tribe of Simeon. They were known for being warriors.
Yes. Dr. Konkol points out that they were a powerful force. But interestingly, they never had a clearly defined territory of their own. Instead, they expanded into the territories of others, like the Philistines and the Edomites.
Wow. They didn't let anything stop them.
They were a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
But the real focus of this part of the lecture is on how Judah rose to prominence.
Right. The big question, why Judah? He wasn't the firstborn son. So what happened? Dr. Conkle finally gives us the chronicler's explanation. What's the story there?
Well, the chronicler suggests that Reuben, the eldest, lost his birthright because of his actions. Remember back in Genesis how he tried to undermine his father by sleeping with Bilhah, Rachel's maidservant?
Oh, yeah?
That definitely caused some serious family drama.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like Judah wasn't about to let Reuben forget it. Exactly. The chronicler is showing us the rivalry that simmered between these brothers, and this rivalry played a part in Judah's rise.
Okay, but what about Joseph? He was given the birthright by Isaac. Shouldn't he have been the one to lead?
That's a really important point. Dr. Conkle acknowledges that Joseph, through his sons Ephraim and Manasseh, did inherit the birthright.
And those two tribes did become dominant, right? At least in terms of territory.
They did. But what's interesting here is that the chronicler seems to be making a distinction between inheritance, which is about land and possessions, and leadership, which is about guiding and uniting the people.
So the birthright is about what you inherit, while leadership is more about your character and actions.
Yes. And the chronicler suggests that true leadership goes beyond material possessions.
Okay, so then how does he justify Judah's leadership role if he didn't have the birthright?
Well, he points to a specific episode from the story of Joseph being sold into slavery. Remember, the initial plan was to leave Joseph to die in a pit, but Judah steps in and suggests selling him instead.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it was still a terrible thing to do, but it did save Joseph's life.
That's right. And the chronicler seizes on this moment to build up Judah's image as a leader. It's like he's saying, look, this is the guy who made the tough call, the one who showed compassion when others were driven by anger and jealousy.
Oh, that's interesting. So he's using this familiar story to highlight a specific aspect of Judah's character, an aspect that makes him fit for leadership.
Exactly. It's subtle, but it's a powerful way to reinforce his argument that Judah was divinely chosen.
It's amazing how the chronicler takes these stories we think we know so well and then reveals these deeper layers of meaning.
That's what makes studying the Book of Chronicles so fascinating. He brings a fresh perspective and encourages us to dig deeper into the text, and we can understand the artistry and the depth of the chronicler's work.
So we've got Judah emerging as this leader. Reuben loses his birthright, and Joseph inherits it, but not necessarily the leadership role. What about the other tribes, specifically those living east of the Jordan River? What does the chronicler have to say about them?
He doesn't neglect them. He talks about Reuben, Gad, and the part of Manasseh that settled in those territories. You know, they were kind of in this unique position living outside the traditional boundaries of the Promised Land. It makes you wonder what their lives were like.
Yeah, they were kind of like pioneers, venturing out into uncharted territory. It must have been exciting and challenging. What kind of insights does the chronicler offer about their experiences?
He emphasizes their strength and resilience, particularly when it comes to Gad. Remember how he highlighted Gad's expansion eastward, battling the Hagarites?
Oh, yeah.
The descendants of Ishmael. That's a detail that you don't find in other biblical accounts.
It's really cool how the chronicler weaves in these details that we might otherwise miss. You know, it's like he's adding depth and richness to, you know, our understanding of Israel's tribal history. But he doesn't seem to be very interested in northern tribes after they're exiled.
No, he doesn't. His focus remains firmly on Judah, the southern kingdom, and a lineage leading to David. It makes me wonder about his motivations for writing Chronicles. Perhaps he saw Judah as the true continuation of God's covenant with Israel.
That's an interesting point. It's like he's shaping a narrative, you know, that centers on Judah's role in God's plan. Speaking of the tribes and their territories, Dr. Conkle brings in some fascinating geographical analysis here. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, so he uses maps to visually represent how vast Manasseh's territory was.
Yeah.
Compared to the smaller territories of Gad and Reuben. And it really drives home his point about Ephraim and Manasseh's dominance as the inheritors of the birthright.
So even though Judah may not have had, like, the most land, the chronicler is emphasizing their spiritual and leadership significance. It's like he's saying that true power isn't just about, you know, land or possessions, but something much deeper.
I think you've hit on something important there. It's about understanding, you know, the different kinds of influence and authority within the tribal structure of Israel. Land ownership was one aspect, but leadership, the ability to guide and unite the people, was something else entirely.
This deep dive has been so interesting so far. We've explored the rise of Judah, the whole birthright thing, and just all these fascinating stories of these different tribes. I have a feeling there's still more to uncover.
You're sensing it, too. There's a depth to the chronicler's work that goes beyond simply recounting these historical events. It's almost as if he's using these genealogies, tribal histories, to point towards a deeper truth.
Okay, now I'm really curious. What could that be? What is the chronicler ultimately trying to convey?
Well, that's a question we'll explore as we continue our deep dive into the line of Judah.
This has been quite a journey with Dr. Conkle's lecture, exploring all these genealogies, the rise of Judah, even untangling this whole birthright thing. What really stands out to you so far? Like, what's the chronicler trying to tell us?
You know, it's fascinating how the chronicler seems to be using these historical accounts to make a theological point. It's not just recounting events.
Right.
He's crafting a narrative that highlights God's hand in Israel's destiny, especially through the line of Judah.
So it's more than just a history lesson. It's like he's giving us a glimpse into God's purpose with Judah right at the center.
Right. And remember, the chronicler is writing during, you know, the post-exilic period.
Right.
The people have returned to Jerusalem, but they're struggling to rebuild their lives, their nation.
Right.
And he's offering them a message of hope, reminding them of their heritage and the faithfulness of God, who brought them back from captivity.
Yeah, it makes sense that he would focus on Judah, the tribe of David.
Right.
And ultimately the Messiah. You know, he's giving them a reason to believe that God's promises are still true, that their future is secure.
Exactly. And notice how he weaves in stories like that of Jabez, a man who turned his pain into prosperity through prayer. It's as if he's reminding his audience that even in times of hardship, you know, God is present and can bring about these unexpected blessings.
It's like he's saying, look, if God can do it for Jabez, he can do it for us too. We just need to trust him and seek his guidance. And that's a really powerful message, especially for a community rebuilding after such a traumatic experience.
I agree. It speaks to the resilience of the human spirit and the enduring nature of God's love and mercy. But you brought up an interesting point earlier. If the chronicler is so focused on Judah and the line leading to David, why spend so much time on Jabez, a figure with no clear genealogical connection, and the whole issue of the birthright, which went to Joseph's sons? Seems a bit like a detour, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I keep coming back to that. Why include those details? If they don't directly relate to Judah's lineage, what's the connection?
That's a brilliant observation, and it raises a really important question. Perhaps the chronicler is suggesting that God's plans don't always follow the most obvious path.
Yeah.
You know, the birthright may have gone to Joseph, but leadership, the ability to guide and unite the people, was bestowed upon Judah.
And maybe Jabez's story is meant to remind us that God can work through anyone, regardless of their background or their circumstances. It's not about having like a prestigious lineage or a claim to the birthright. It's about seeking God's will and being open to his guidance.
I like that. The chronicler might be hinting that God's grace and power are available to all who seek him, not just those with a particular lineage or social standing.
This has been such a remarkable deep dive. I mean, we've gained so much from just one session of Dr. Conkle's lecture.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how the chronicler, writing centuries ago, can still speak to us today. His message of hope, resilience, and the sometimes unexpected ways that God works, it's timeless.
He invites us to really engage with the text, wrestle with its complexities, and to discover these timeless truths that resonate across generations.
We've only just scratched the surface, but it's been fascinating. And to you, our listener, we'll leave you with this thought-provoking question to ponder. If the chronicler's focus is on Judah and the lineage leading to David, why spend so much time highlighting that story of Jabez and the complexities of the birthright? What deeper message might he be conveying? Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.